Salutations, my friends, and thank you for tuning in to another edition of Factions of Freedom. I'm your host, Noisera, Freedom Faction, whichever one you prefer, and I have titled this episode, Orwellian Realities, Designing the Future and Influential Opposition, because it seems like, yet again, we have found ourselves at a little bit of a crossroads. Seems like Kanye West is trying to make people woke again, saying stuff. Got Pope Francis over here talking about gun control and the like, and John Podesta, that's right, creepy John Podesta, you know, Chester Bennington's father, allegedly, he made an appearance on Ancient Aliens. We have so much that we're going to get into. Emotional surveillance technology, holographic beams being shot into the brain, chemtrail lung, doctors talking about that, and so much more. Wow, we have a information-packed episode for you guys, that's for sure. But before we get into all this stuff, make sure you guys are checking out the website, factionsoffreedom.gemdo.com. And once you're there, get lost on all the content that we have to offer to you guys, because it does not stop. The work that we do, it does not stop. So with that being said, let's get right into the episode. And thank you guys for tuning into another edition of Factions of Freedom. Wow, holy crap. We have an episode jam-packed for you guys. This is going to be a little bit of a wild ride, but it's also going to be a little bit of a continuation from the previous episode that we did just last week. Shocker. The craziness has not gone away. If anything, it's only intensified. But we're still here to talk about it. You know, I think it's crazy that we literally have to deal with not only censorship, we have to deal with Mark Zuckerberg, we have to deal with Trump, we have to deal with the social engineers, we have to deal with the influencers, we have to deal with the ignorant people, we have to deal with the sheep, we have to deal with it all every single day, every single week. And it's not going to go away. It's not. But I tell you what will go away. Those that do not care, those that are unimportant. And I say that from personal experience, not just generally speaking, I say that from personal experience. You know, what some of you may have noticed this week in particular, if not the past few weeks, is that I've kind of eased up on posting on social media. I really have. I'm not hugging the phone. I'm not having it attached to my face or to my hand. You know, that'll give you cancer and all kinds of other stuff. No, what I've been doing instead is I've been doing the exact opposite of eating out. I've been eating in. I've been making salads. I've been having pistachios. I've been eating all kinds of healthy food. I've been working out. I've been hanging out with neighbors. I've been getting back to the basics. And let me tell you, it is something that it's got its own appeal. It's crazy. We have become so disassociated from reality that just doing very basic reality stuff, it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. And now here we are. Just the other week, you know, we were talking about David Hogg and how he was trying to come for your guns. You know, they were using this little cutout puppet, little mouthpiece kid, hair-coiffed little kid, trying to have him be the spokesperson for trying to come after your guns. And, you know, look at where we are this week. No, we're not talking about Syria. No, we're not talking about the Russians doing something. No, we're not. Believe it or not, we're actually talking about how North Korea and South Korea are trying to unify. And on top of that, they're trying to give Donald Trump a Nobel Peace Prize for it. But just like Obama and his warmongering, you know, dropping drone strikes on people in Syria, Trump is now getting his Nobel Peace Prize nomination. So here we are. Yay, we're about halfway through 2018. Look at where we're going. And they haven't hit the detonation button yet. So why am I coming in to the episode kind of all over the place, laughy, jokey, making fun of everything? Well, you've got to look at it. The idea is to have an optimistic mindset, to have a hopeful mindset, to bring light, to bring joy, to bring happiness, understanding, compassion, to bring that into the world. Despite everything that you guys see us cover over here on the show, I'm probably one of the more nicer people you'll ever meet. Extraordinarily optimistic. I have so much hope for the future and for us. I just know we got to figure out what we're doing first. And because we've been in a position of disadvantage for so long, acting like winners and acting like a successful people, as we should be, that's foreign to us, and that's where we got to go. But, you know, it's the mindset, really, that I'm attacking and that I'm kind of joking at these days. We have so much that we're under, like so much global oppression, that it's crazy. Not what they would have you perceive as perception or oppression. The same way I said, you know, in relation to, again, the David Hogg and the gun control narrative that they're trying to push, it's not necessarily revolutionary if you have all kinds of mainstream media outlets out there trying to carry your message. Now, recently here in New Mexico, we had somebody who was standing for the Second Amendment. He had his own walkout for people who were trying to stand up for the Second Amendment out there in Carlsbad. Now, what I'm trying to point out is we are engaged, we are interlocked with a culture war right now. We have so many different things happening that if you're bored, you must not be paying attention, because you really can't see what's happening. History is being made, and we have a chance to participate. We have a chance to define the next culture that is coming. I mean, even now, being in this position, ironically enough, we're coming up on the 3-year anniversary of the very first episode I did with Factions of Freedom. You know, 3 years ago, guys. But that was just when we started the podcast, before we had even become Factions of Freedom. We were still Vanguard of Renaissance. You know, this is before we started coming out with videos and all kinds of other stuff. But actually, that was after, but I digress. The point I'm trying to make is, when you take a stance today, you affect tomorrow. You influence the weeks thereafter. Now, this could be because I've been working out, I have this mindset, or it might be the fact that we are literally, like I said, at the 3-year anniversary mark of us having our podcast. Now, the point is this: we can have an effect in the future. We just have to know what kind of future we would like to create. Like they say all the time, be the change in the world that you want to see. So with that being said, let's get into the episode. Let's start talking about this type of stuff. Why are we here today? Why is the episode titled Orwellian Realities, Designing the Future and Influential Oppressions? Well, I couldn't decide if I wanted to say oppressions or opposition, but we've got to look at how George Orwell's 1984 and Brave New World, that has somehow become our reality. We look at shows of past days, and they look like documentaries. You think of people who have simpler goals, simpler mindsets. Things weren't so complex. You look at where things are today. It's crazy. This is the scientific dictatorship. This is the New World Order. This is the technocracy. This is the Illuminati. This is what's happening. But let's look into some articles, okay? Let's look into what's actually going on real time. Right? So, Bill Gates, and for people who are tuning in, because we have new listeners all the time, every week, you know, we have somebody from a new country. It's awesome. But what is not awesome that we see right here is the simulation of this global flu pandemic, so that within 6 months, almost 30 million people will have died. But guess who made that prediction? Bill Gates, my arch nemesis, Bill Gates. That's what I was trying to say beforehand. For the people that are tuning in that are new, I have a villainous hatred towards Bill Gates and what this man stands for and what he does, because that's how these people operate. They put out the problem, and then they come forward with a solution. Now, this article for Activist Post, I put it up April 30th. It says Bill Gates warns of coming apocalyptic disease, pledges $12 million to universal vaccines. Now, prior to them deleting some of our YouTube videos, or the majority of our YouTube archive, I had a few videos, and you can probably find some of the episodes after, but we kind of talked about how Bill Gates and other people, the Rockefeller Institution, or the Rockefeller Foundation, how they have patents in Zika and genetically modified mosquitoes. You now see them trying to release them in Florida and in California as well. Why am I talking about genetically modified mosquitoes and Bill Gates? Well, again, this plays into the Hegelian dialectic. These people trying to offer a solution to the very problem that they have caused. Now, we pay attention to biowarfare, disease, and things of this nature on the show all the time because it's important. It's very, very important. You literally have them releasing the bioweapon, releasing warfare onto us. And if we can't take our own health into our hands, if we can't have our own wealth, which is health, then we become slaves to this system, you see. Now, this apocalyptic disease that they're trying to talk about, they say that it could be smallpox. Let me get into this article right here. And it says, the next deadly disease that will cause a global pandemic is coming. Bill Gates stated at a discussion on epidemics hosted by the Massachusetts Medical Society and the New England Journal of Medicine. Business Insider reported, quote, "There's one area, though, where the world isn't making much progress," Gates said, "and that's the pandemic preparedness." Quote, "In case of the biological threats, the sense of urgency is lacking," he said. "The world needs to prepare for the pandemic in the same serious way it prepares for war," according to Gates. A small non-state actor could build an even deadlier form of smallpox in the lab. Now, what I'm trying to point out by reading this to you guys, a non-state actor. We've talked again about how biohackers, people who take it upon themselves to inject themselves with new forms of DNA, new forms of pharmaceuticals, who knows what they're doing, but they're augmenting their bodies. This is the crux of transhumanism, using science and technology to move themselves to a different state of being. Now, a non-state actor, somebody who has no allegiance to anyone, totally free range, a freelancer, a mercenary, so to speak, right? Say they modify themselves, they put some kind of chemical gas inside of some kind of explosive tank or a car of some kind. They drive it somewhere, bing, bang, boom. They detonate the bomb, and now the bomb releases some kind of bioweapon. That bioweapon then disperses amongst the people that are in that vicinity, and then because people are unaware of this newly created disease, you know, they can use things like CRISPR-Cas9, some kind of genome editing technology to basically create a new form of, as they say, smallpox that has a more aggressive nature to it, and just like that, they've got a disease on the way. Now, imagine that on somebody who actually knows what they're doing and isn't just generalizing like myself. But continuing on with this article, it says Gates presented a simulation by the Institute of Disease Modeling that simulated a new flu like the one that killed 50 million people in the 1918 pandemic. It says that the study found if there was a flu, it would have most likely killed an astounding 30 million people within 6 months. Precisely. Now imagine a suicide bomber. Right? Suicide bomber, somebody all hopped up on God knows what, and they detonate themselves. They come through, and then just like that, they've released the weapon. What I find astonishing, again, the fact that, you know, Bill Gates, he's over here dedicating $12 million to a universal vaccine, something to try to fight this. You have people like this who say, don't worry about taking your own health into your consideration. Don't worry about taking your own health back. No, 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 no. What you need to do, is you need to come over here and get these vaccines. You need to come over here, come get these shots. You need to come over here and let us inject you with all kinds of stuff. I don't believe in that. And I also found a doctor who doesn't necessarily believe in that as well. I'm going to be playing for you guys a clip where we listen to this doctor talk about chemtrail lung, new health epidemics, lung brain problems, and these all pertain to eugenics, to biowarfare, to all the stuff that we talk about here on the show. Because what we're
going to still say, and I just wanted him to reiterate what he just said.
Okay. Hello, whoever you all are.
Get closer. Yes.
So there is an emerging problem that we're having in society all over the world, actually, and it's called chemtrail lung. There are more and more respiratory conditions that are showing up because of the toxic chemicals, heavy metals, gases, virus particles, and other things that are being sprayed across the atmosphere, especially in this area, because Palmdale Airport is a source of a lot of top secret activity that takes place. And there's also a lot of still breathing of fracking gases from Porter Ranch and the other surrounding areas.
That's right,
areas
that big, yeah.
And also because of the topography of the way the Santa Ana winds blow in this area.
Right.
And on top of all of that, the smog. And on top of all of that, about the amount of inhalation of mold and mildew in the walls of the buildings and things of this sort.
That's true.
So the combination of all of these things, plus the overuse of antibiotics.
Plus
being in the cold and the flu season in general.
And how do you feel about the flu shot? I mean, I did not get one, and I won't ever get one. I don't believe in them. I know some people do. How do you feel about the flu shot?
I don't recommend it in general.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few categories of people who are most appropriate for getting them, mm-hmm. but not every year, because so much of the time the true effectiveness and efficacy of flu shots is very, very low, and it's not necessarily that it's a benefit. It's a public health policy issue, but it is not necessarily a physiologic benefit to the patients.
Even though they want you to get one and they say, oh, come on in to get your flu shot. They encourage it, but at the same time, it could be a difference. So it could actually make it worse.
Yeah, well, we've been dealing with, sub 30%, sometimes even sub 20% effectiveness of flu vaccines in recent years.
20%.
And it's a guess as to what may be needed in the composition of a flu vaccine in order to get it ready for distribution.
Right.
And then most of the time, we miss more than we hit. So it's not something that as a public health specialist, as well as a primary care specialist and all that, I routinely recommend. I know that there's policies there, and I know that there's something called best practices.
Right.
But if you look at it more in general...
He said best practices, not brass practices. That's different. It's a whole other show.
So if you look at it in terms of what else people can be doing, there's a whole lot more that people can do to improve their health from a prevention point of view and from a detoxing point of view and from a proactive health orientation.
Be proactive, right.
As opposed to just simply...
Wow. So what you guys basically heard right there was a TV host, Rachel Renestra, interviewing a doctor. They did not necessarily list his name in here, but they talked about how in California, near the Palmdale area, all the stuff that we talk about here on the show, with chemtrails, with mold, mildew, fracking, antibiotics, smog, all the stuff that we literally breathe in every day, how that affects us, and how that's a new emerging health epidemic that people are unaware of. Now, why am I talking about that on the heels of talking about Bill Gates releasing the bioweapon? Because disease is the soft kill depopulation option for these people. And whenever we come through talking about ways to affect ourselves, ways to heal ourselves, they don't like that. We've been talking about it, and this article has been kind of making its way through outlets and all kinds of pages and people who are getting the word out there. But a Goldman Sachs analyst talked about how curing diseases, that's not a sustainable business model. Now, we're not going to go into that, but what we are going to go into is how a holistic CEO who found, quote, a cure for AIDS was found dead in D.C. Now, why are we talking about this? Because, again, it talks about how these people, or it exemplifies how people who go against this territorial, tyrannical, vicious, villainous cycle of disease being the cure. That's what Big Pharma basically makes, is diseases, and then they pass it off as cures. Anyone who goes against the system, they demonize them. They demonize them or they kill them. I mean, look at what we were talking about before with... Dr. Timothy Cunningham, the CDC doctor who is against vaccines, boom, he gets killed. They find him in, I think, Tennessee. There's a woman who brought a petition to California to try to fight against the smog that they were putting in the air. Boom, they killed her. They found her in a tub or in a pool upstairs in her hotel. And now, boom, we have Aaron Trawick. His body was discovered in a sensory deprivation tank face down. And you know what the point of all this is? Is to make us so sick and so riddled with disease that we literally can't figure out how to procreate because we become sterile or because we become sickly because we can't. And so that they use all kinds of different ways, such as transhumanism, maybe even making embryos from skin cells, and then basically governing who's allowed to have kids. But let me get into this, and we'll get into that shortly after this. I put this up May 2nd. It's from Lock News Network. It says, a famous controversial holistic healer who recently made headlines after claiming he had found a natural cure for AIDS has been found dead. He was 28. Aaron Trawick's body was discovered face down in a Massachusetts Avenue spa room in downtown Washington, D.C. on Sunday, according to the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department. Multiple news outlets reported that Trawick was found dead inside a flotation tank. When a police spokeswoman said no evidence has been found to suggest foul play, Trawick, a well-known health and lifestyle coach who was actively campaigning for people to take control of their lives and reject Big Pharma's crippling products, joins a long list of holistic doctors and healers who have been killed in suspicious or unsolved circumstances during the past 2 years. Trawick recently claimed his holistic, quote, biohacking company had developed a do-it-yourself research compound that could cure HIV, AIDS, and herpes. He was set to provide proof of the cure and open the compound for diagnostic testing later in 2018. Quote, Aaron was a passionate visionary. He was seemingly never tired as he brought people together to work on some of the most imposing challenges facing humanity. Ascendance Biomedical employee Tristan Roberts said in a statement, quote, while many in biohacking in the biohacking scene disagreed with his methods, none of them doubted his intentions. He saw nothing short of a revolution in biomedicine, the democratization of science, and the opening of the floodgates for global healing. In an interview last year, Trawick explained that biohacking refers to an individual's efforts to alter their own biology by a variety of means, including lifestyle, diet changes, surgery, and the use of holistic, often unlicensed, therapies. However, Big Pharma and mainstream media conspired to smear his holistic practice and also worked overtime 4 years to persecute the Trawick in an attempt to drive him out of the business. Now, why is this important? Because this is so emblematic of so many different things. As I said before, I'm getting my health in check. I'm working out more. I'm not using so much social media. I'm not playing into this nonsense they have us doing. I'm eating healthy. I am trying to, in this sense, biohack, change my lifestyle, eat better, diet better. But you have people like Dr. Sebi, now Aaron Trawick. You have Dr. Timothy Cunningham. The all kinds of different people who were out there trying to affect change, and they kill them off. This is why, again, you see me networking with different people who are working on different types of products, natural supplements, detoxes, cleanses, alternative and holistic approaches to just medicine, energy, and everything else, because that's what we need. That's the future. Regardless of people, regardless of Big Pharma trying to stop people from developing these types of things, this has to happen. What we have right now is not a sustainable business model. So in a weird way, the analyst over at Goldman Sachs is correct. It is not sustainable. We cannot do these types of things. Because Big Pharma pays universities for most of the medical research they have. Because we have people, we have things like Monsanto and Bayer teaming up. Because they understand, like, what is going on. What they're trying to do is slowly depopulate and kill the planet, kill us all. The point is to make us so sterile, so diseased, and so sickly that we have to come to these people for help. there are so many different avenues to look at that it becomes kind of crazy to really put it together. Let's get into this with some of the time that we have before we take a break. Let's get into this. How they're literally creating, as I said before, babies, embryos from skin cells.
After years of research, the laboratory of Nicolas Rivron has found out how to induce stem cells to organize themselves and develop into an early embryo-like structure in a dish, all in the lab. This scientific breakthrough has truly opened up the black box of early pregnancy.
Surprisingly, we know very little about the first days of pregnancy. At that time, the embryo is extremely small. It's about the width of a hair. And it's hidden in the womb. It is floating inside the uterus. It contains less than 100 cells. And the cells from the outside are the stem cells that are going to form the placenta. Inside, there is a very small cluster of about 10 embryonic stem cells that are going to form the whole embryo. We can easily harvest, culture, and multiply stem cells in the lab. We can do this for very early placental stem cells, very early embryonic stem cells, and they multiply while remaining locked in time.
After years of research, the laboratory of Nicolas...
So to me, not even to me, what it sounds like is we're literally creating... We're creating life, and not life from nothing. You know, you have to have something to create life from nothing, but what we're creating is... life that wasn't intended to be life, you know, and then you can get into all kinds of different philosophical discussions about that, because the simple fact that we're alive means that we would like more life to be made, but there's so much, so many complex things to look at here with this, but, you know, cloning in so many different ways is very intriguing, very scary, very interesting for people involved. I mean, if you don't think clones exist, you should probably go back to a few of our episodes where we talked about this. Things like ectogenesis, gametogenesis, that's very real. Cloning, you know, you've got to ask what kind of method is it? You know, is it biological or is it mechanical? There's so many different things that come with it. But this is where we're at. You know, this is what I mean by, again, biohacking in another sense. But let me get into this article right here. It says, Days of Noah. Human clone fears as neuroscientists create life from nothing. I put this up May 3rd. It's from End Times Headlines. It's by Ricky Scaparo. It says that the experimental research combined two types of stem cells and created a viable embryo, which the team say would provide an unlimited stock for medical research. The created embryos would also be used for medical treatment testing and help shed light on one of the biggest infertility enigmas, why embryos fail to implant in the womb. However, critics say it's a huge step towards human cloning. And so, before I go in, talking again about this type of stuff, realize that they are already growing mini brains. They call them organoids. So, the fears are entirely understandable. They are really, really understandable fears that we have going on with that. Scientists don't really know when to stop. Technocrats don't really know when to stop. So when you have organoids, mini brains that are being grown, they're doing LSD, MDMA, they're doing psilocybin, they're doing all kinds of different drugs to these mini brains just to see the effects. On top of that, they already have people, or not really people, they have incubators, they have tanks, they have human-animal hybrids, animal-human hybrids. They literally use pigs, sheep, goats, cows, as literal tanks for these hybridized experiments that are going on. So whenever we're talking about going too far with human cloning, researchers saying that, you know, that's a huge step towards cloning and that could cause some problems, it's because they know what scientists will do. They're not going to stop. But continuing on, it says that the researchers believe the wonder creation could see mice being cloned in 3 years' time, and humans, 2 decades later. I doubt that. They already have it. This is their way of telling you. Lead researcher, Professor Nicolas Rivron, Reverend of the Maastricht University, said that the main use for the embryos would be to test drugs and to solve the infertility riddle. He said, as you know, embryos are very precious, and it is impossible to test drugs on them as you don't have the numbers. With blastocysts, you can open up the numbers. This will allow screening medicines in the future. Quote, I do not believe in using blastocysts for human reproduction. This is ethically very questionable. This would be clones of somebody who is already alive. And that's, again, what I meant of bringing into the discussion all the philosophical questions that come with it. But what we're talking about is them trying to create designer babies, trying to create the future, trying to tell us what we can and cannot do. As I said before, and as we've talked about here on the show, even just last week, you know, with human rodent hybrids, with human animal organs, with cloning monkeys, pig brains outside of the body, you know, you name it. What we're beginning to see, what's becoming more of a reality, is how what it means to be human, not only is it being radically altered, but it's not so much that it's even being manipulated. It's being discussed, it's being changed, it's being altered. The discussion is being pushed. The idea, the not so much the idea, the reality that we see ourselves living in, it's becoming more present. They're radically shifting what it means to be human so that they can come through and have a reason to kill us, to call us monsters, to call us something that isn't worthy of life. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about some of this stuff that's going on, some of this Facebook's dating feature, mining data from the mind, and how The Sims creator wants your memories. But like I said, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about this and more on the other side. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. This is Freedom Faction over here on Factions of Freedom. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
And we are back. Thank you guys for hanging around. Thank you for hearing the sound. Really appreciate being able to have this kind of deep, real connection with you guys over things that are important to me. You know, growing up and seeing these types of things, and not having a proper outlet to discuss them, was very. It wasn't disconcerting. It was just different. You know, growing up, you see all this crazy stuff going on in the world. You want to talk about it with people, but, you know, people, they're so lost in the world, they can't even talk about it themselves. So you kind of, you shut down. You think, well, gosh, maybe I am crazy. Speaking of crazy, Facebook's launching a dating feature. Now that is crazy.
We are announcing a new set of features coming soon around dating. Now this is gonna be for building real long-term relationships, all right, not just hookups. It's gonna be in the Facebook app, but it's totally optional. It's opt-in. If you want, you can make a dating profile, and I know a lot of you are gonna have questions about this, so I wanna be clear that we have designed this with privacy and safety in mind from the beginning. Your friends aren't gonna see your profile. You're only gonna be suggested people who are not your friends, who have opted into dating, who fit your preferences, although I can't promise that you're going to get Ime. It's a tough world. All right, Chris Cox will come up in a bit and walk you through this in more detail, because I want to make sure that you all see. We are
now, why am I placing this? Features. Because we're literally, and we'll get back to this. I'll let Mark Zuckerberg come up over here again and make a fool of himself as he tries to save face from his recent Cambridge Analytica scandal. But why am I talking about Facebook dating off of the heels of talking about designer babies? Now, what you've really got to understand, and Black Mirror did a great episode on this, what this is eugenics-based or artificially-based eugenics dating program. Okay, now they say it's going to be entirely anonymous. Realize we're moving anonymous and autonomous, realizing we're moving into the world where we're having AI and computers run everything. They say that they'll hook you up with somebody that's compatible, right? Look at Tinder, look at Match.com, look at all these other things out there. They're using, again, your metadata, your preferences, and things like this to create a genetic profile for you. This is, again, why we're talking about DNA and everything else that's important like that. Because this is this world that they're trying to create, this reality to where we fork over our information so easily. They're trying to play God. They want to figure out a way to have unilateral control over people. You see. Now, like I said before we took the break, I told you we were going to be talking about the Facebook dating feature, mining data from your mind, and how the Sims creator wants your memories. But let's just take a quick listen to this kid from MIT and how he has developed a mind reading device.
What is 45?
Mind reading device.
1,689 divided by 67.
Sure.
He silently asked the computer and then hears the answer through vibrations transmitted through his skull and into his inner ear.
6, 8, 1, 0.9, 2, 5.
Exactly right. One more. What's the largest city in Bulgaria, and what is the population? The screen shows how long it takes the computer to read the words that he's saying to himself.
Sofia, 1.1 million?
That is correct. You just Googled that.
I did.
You could be an expert in any subject.
Mm-hmm.
You have the entire internet in your head.
That's the idea.
What is 45,689?
That's the idea.
Divided by 67.
Sure.
That's the idea.
Ask the computer, and then hears the answer through vibrations transmitted through his skull and into his inner ear.
That's the idea. They want to have mind-reading capabilities. Now, the article we're going to be going over, it's basically similar to this, where we're talking about how they're finding ways to monitor your mind. They're finding ways to monitor your brain waves, to have access to your mind, to your brain. Realize too, just the other week, we had a document that came out, muckrock.com or muckrock.news. They broke it. The entire world found it. They were sent all kinds of documents about how the Department of Defense or Homeland Security, how they released blueprints, not really blueprints, but information on remote mind control. And this is something else that we went over, how they were talking about the delta, theta, alpha, beta, gamma, and mu ranges, how those can all be hijacked. And then this week, we're talking about how what? China now mines data directly from workers' brains. Could this be because of things like the MIT mind reading device? But let me get into this article. It's from Technocracy News. I put this up April 30th. It's by Stefan Chen. It says, Orwell was a Neanderthal at surveillance compared to what technocrats in China are currently implementing. Brainwave sensors that continuously monitor your emotions and state of mind. While offered as a worker safety technique, there is no comfort to be taken from this draconian application to control human behavior. On the surface, the production lines at Hangzhou Xing Electric look like any other. Workers outfitted in uniforms and staff lines producing sophisticated equipment for telecommunication and other industrial sectors. But there's one big difference. The workers wear caps to monitor their brain waves, data that management then uses to adjust the pace of production and redesign workflows, according to the company. The company said that it would increase the overall efficiency of the workers by manipulating the frequency and the length of break times to reduce mental stress. Hangzhou Xing Electric is just one example of the large-scale application of brain surveillance devices to monitor people's emotions and other mental activities in the workplace. According to scientists and companies involved in the government-backed projects, concealed in regular safety helmets or uniform hats, these lightweight wireless sensors constantly monitor the wearer's brain waves and stream the data to computers that use artificial intelligence algorithms to detect emotional spikes such as depression, anxiety, or rage. So if you freak out, you're like, God, I hate my boss, you know, they're going to pick up on that. They're going to say, gosh, you know, this guy's rage, he needs to calm down. He needs to calm down. How far off do you think we are from them just being able to beam down some kind of pacification wave, some kind of, I don't know, just some kind of electric signal that's just like, hey, we're going to attack your adrenaline sector of your brain and just nullify that. We're going to replace it with dopamine, make you feel good, give you some serotonin so you just have pleasure. Stop feeling rage, feel happy now. How far off do you think we are from that? Continuing on with this article, it says the technology is in widespread use around the world, but China has applied it on an unprecedented scale in factories, public transport, state-owned companies, and the military to increase the competitiveness of its manufacturing industry and to maintain social stability. It has also raised concerns that the need for regulation to prevent abuses in the workplace. The technology is also in use at Hangzhou at the state grid Zhejiang Electric Power, where it has boosted company profits by about 2 million yuan, which is equivalent to $315 American, since it was rolled out in 2014, according to Cheng Xiao, a official overseeing the company's emotional surveillance program. Emotional surveillance program. That's crazy. And that is where we are. Might sound wild, but as I said before, you know, you have Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg literally competing, trying to come up with ways to have more effective neural laces, looking for ways to integrate us into the matrix. That is crazy to me. But while we're here talking about how technocratic and crazy China is, continuing on, let's listen to how this Chinese journalist was banned from flying, buying property under the new social credit score system.
Liu Hu recently tried to book a flight. He was told he was banned from flying because he's on the list of untrustworthy people. Liu was a journalist who was ordered by a court to apologize for a series of tweets he wrote and was then told his apology was insincere. I can't buy property. My child can't go to private school, he says. You feel you're being controlled by the list all the time. And the list is now getting longer, as every Chinese citizen is being assigned a social credit score, a fluctuating rating based on a range of behaviors. It's believed that community service and buying Chinese-made products can raise your score. Fraud, tax evasion, and smoking in non-smoking areas can drop it. China's growing network of surveillance cameras makes all of this possible.
It can recognize more than 4,000 vehicles.
Xu Li is the CEO of SenseTime, one of China's most successful artificial intelligence companies. It is Liu Hu recently tried to book a flight.
And we're going to listen to the second part of that, the second part of that report right now.
This knows every person, every bike, every car, every bus.
You can tell whether it is an adult, a child, a male or female.
In several big cities in China, including here in Shanghai, the government is even tracking jaywalkers. Cameras record them going through intersections, zero in on their face, and then publicly shame them. On nearby video screens.
Ken Dewaskin has studied China's economic and political culture for more than three decades. He says how the new scoring system truly works is kept secret and could be easily abused by the government.
How far into people's daily mundane activities does this go?
Well, I think that the government and the people running the plan would like to go as deeply as possible to determine how to allocate benefits and also how to impact and shape their behavior.
Now, there are upsides for people the Chinese government considers trustworthy. They can actually get better interest rates at banks. They can get discounts on their energy bills. And China's largest online data. This
now, that's crazy.
Every person, every bike.
It wants to know everybody. It wants to know every single thing it can about you. And this is why when we're looking at the emotional surveillance system of China, that's not far off from their social credit system. This is the technocracy. This is the surveillance state. This is the new world order. This is what these people are trying to achieve. What we have to understand is that now, moving forward into this future, they are going to grade behavior, as they say right there, trustworthy people. Where have we heard that word trustworthy before? Facebook is now talking about making news outlets trustworthy. And I highly doubt that we'll be on there simply because of the type of stuff that we talk about. But let's go back to, again, Facebook talking about launching this dating feature. And as I said before, I consider it a artificially intelligent eugenics-based dating program. But let's take a listen.
We are announcing a new set of features coming soon around dating. Now, this is going to be for building real long-term relationships, all right? Not just hookups. It's going to be in the Facebook app, but it's totally optional. It's opt-in. If you want, you can make a dating profile and. And I know a lot of you are going to have questions about this, so I want to be clear that we have designed this with privacy and safety in mind from the beginning. Your friends aren't going to see your profile. You're only going to be suggested people who are not your friends, who have opted into dating, who fit your preferences, although I can't promise that you're going to get Ime. It's a tough world. All right, Chris Cox will come up in a bit and walk you through this in more detail. Because I want to make sure that you all see. We are
this guy.
A new set of features. Coming
a new set of features. Around. This guy straight up sounds like a Muppet. But continuing on. You know, addressing the fact that we have a Muppet literally leading so many different things within the country, within the world. What that is, again, to me, is connecting, like he said, hooking up with non-friends, hooking up with people who aren't your friends, connecting with people who you normally wouldn't otherwise connect with. What they're basically trying to do is have your private feelings or your private preferences, making those public, using their system to, again, curtail you, to use their algorithms, their matrix, their design, to use their system to basically give you what you want. Now, hear me out. I'm sure everybody gets kind of tired of seeing the same kind of news outlets that we have. They're going to create an echo chamber where all you see in here is you. All you see in here are the things that you want to see. And if you're given the things that you want to see, you don't necessarily benefit from the things that you're not supposed to see. Do you know how many, a perfect example, when I took that 2-week break from social media and from everybody else, I had so many people that contacted me saying, you know, at first I didn't really like you because you're kind of out there, but I missed seeing your information on my random feed. It's not so much that I missed you. I missed the information. I missed that little dose of reality. And that little dose of reality, that gives you that adversity to know that there's other things going on out there for you to change. How does this apply to dating and relationships? If you just give in preferences and get whatever you want to get, you're not really going to grow. You're not going to know adversity. You're not going to know challenge. You're not going to know trauma. You're not going to know things that advance you. And again, this is artificially intelligent, eugenics-based dating program, giving you what you think you want. There are so many people out there, that's why they have to use these systems to give you that which you think you want when it's not really what you need. And on top of that, they're just trying to get you in the pleasure, in the pleasure palace, to where all you think about is sex, to where all you want is emotion. Well, not really emotion, lust. That's what you crave after. You see. And that's why we really have to understand them talking about mind-reading devices, dating programs, emotional surveillance programs. All this stuff is beyond what George Orwell could ever have imagined. But another thing to think about as well, the creator of Sims wants your memories. He wants your memories for his new game. Let's take a listen. That clip's not ready, or it's not queued up. We'll get this queued up. So yeah, the creator of Sims wants your memories for his new game. Let's take a listen. Well, while that takes its time to load, basically what we're talking about, the game developer Will Wright is using parts of your memory for this game that he's trying to create. Now, for people who are unaware of what The Sims is, it stands for simulations. And what it basically is a, just that, a simulation. And you are the god. You are the one that gives the stimuli. You create towns, you create people, you create lives, you create children, you create the backstory. You do all these different types of things. But now, he wants access to your memories for this next game he's creating. And I know that seems kind of far-fetched. You know, why would somebody want to have access to our memories? Why would they want to do that? So that they can manipulate them. So that it can manipulate you. The idea behind this is so that you can uncover the hidden you. Well, let me get into this post. It says, depending on your age and affinity with computer games, you may be familiar with The Sims and other games that stemmed out from that. These games allow you to create your own house, decorate it, choose your family, your spouse, amusement park, and essentially play God. Playing this game as a kid was always too much fun, and no doubt brought the developer, Will Wright, a huge success, as this was a groundbreaking idea for its time. Now, his new project is defying what our minds can comprehend, as he hopes to intertwine our very own personal memories into the game, and he's asking for your help.
I'm all right, game designer, responsible for many games you might be familiar with, including SimCity, The Sims, and Spore. The new game I'm working on is called Proxy. Now, this is in some sense a game of self-discovery, a game where we actually uncover the hidden you, your subconscious, your inner id, and bring it to the surface, bring it to life so that you can interact with it, you can play with it, you can learn from it, and it can learn about you. We do this primarily by pulling out the memories from your past, those unique things that happened in your life that make you who you are. To do this, we've actually partnered with Unity to announce a contest to find an artist that can help us bring this to life, to manifest these memories as tangible, visceral gameplay elements in a cool and unique way. You can enter this contest at Unity Connect, and to that artist, and I know you're out there, I look forward to meeting you. Thank you.
Now that's a crazy concept. Pulling your memories from you so that they can create a better version of you, so that you can interact with you. Create the digital self so that the physical self can represent it. There is so much going on with that. That is some techno sorcery if I've ever heard of it. And it's crazy. You have an entire generation of people walking around who are basically shells for Xbox and for PlayStation, who live and die for gaming, for the gaming industry. Jeff Bezos of Amazon owns Twitch. I didn't know that. That was crazy. So when all this Twitch stuff that's going on, when you talk about Major League Gaming and et cetera, Jeff Bezos is getting paid. Amazon's getting paid having people play games. That's crazy. Now, that market is booming. People are growing from that. But what I'm trying to say is you have an entire industry of people who were literally shells for Xbox and PlayStation, Microsoft, and Sony. They literally just go to work, eat, sleep, breathe, and play Xbox. That's it. That's all they do. You have people who are more immersed in Xbox and gaming than they are in the real world. Now, take that into consideration with something like this, something who has access to your memories. Say something downloads your Facebook profile, all the stuff that you didn't delete or deactivate, or that they didn't delete or deactivate, and it somehow, in a weird algorithmic, wow, I'm really having a hard time with this. They come up with an algorithm to literally create your memories from everything that you've done in Facebook, simply to talk to you about what you did in Facebook and to make you better from it. This is just a hypothetical, but think about that. Think about what this means, the technology, the times that we're in. You can get Sims on your phone. See where we'll be in 10, 20 years down the line. Where will technology be? We think this is a joke now, but in the future, something that is this strange, could you imagine being able to have a hologram discussion or a discussion with a hologram of yourself? That's crazy. That is crazy. That's whenever they're able to hack your senses and tell you, well, what you may think as real may not even be real at all. What you might think as normal, what you feel, see, think, and hear to you, it seems normal. But it wouldn't be. And that would be the craziest thing. The way that you interact with the world wouldn't be normal. There are neuroscientists at the University of California who have literally created what they have called a holographic brain modulator that would hack your senses. This is a post from Drudge Report feed. I put this up April 30th. It says holograms projected onto the brain could replace lost senses, a device that could one day allow the blind to see or the paralyzed to feel touch by projecting holograms onto brain cells is being developed by scientists. By using light as a tool to alter brain function, it might be possible to mimic real sensations and perceptions, they have suggested. Named the holographic brain modulator, the device is still in its very early stages, but in a paper published in the journal Nature Neuroscience, the researchers outlined some promising early results. Quote, "This is one of the first steps in a long road to develop a technology that could be a virtual brain implant that with additional senses or enhanced senses," said Dr. Alan Martley, a neuroscientist at the University of California, Berkeley, who participated in the work. The researchers hope that from their initial experiments modifying the brain cells of mice, the technology will one day have the capacity to mimic such senses, such as sight or touch, in people who have lost them. The ability to talk to the brain has the incredible potential to help compensate for neurological damage caused by degenerative diseases or injury, said Professor Ehud Iskoff, another Berkeley scientist who was not involved in the project. Quote, by encoding perceptions into the human cortex, you could allow the blind to see or the paralyzed to feel touch. Image showing a sample hologram with 50 randomly distributed points indicating the location of different neurons in the brain being targeted in the ADNISC lab in UC Berkeley. Basically what they're doing is they're using light, shooting that onto your brain and telling you, hey, we're going to fix those senses. We know things are kind of messed up, but don't worry, we got you. We got that future technology, and we're going to make you better. So everything that we're talking about, using emotional surveillance programming, using the sense hacking, using the holographic brain, using all of this stuff, it's important. This is what they literally do to try to monitor and manipulate society. This is what I mean when I'm talking about designing the future in Orwellian realities. But we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about the other part of the show, the influential oppressions, the influential opposition. People like John Podesta, Kanye West, Pope Francis, and Cardinal George Bell. We'll be talking about them and more on the other side. So ladies and gentlemen, you guys stay tuned. I'll talk to you real soon. This is Factions of Freedom. That's what's up, and we're back, and I am very, very, very grateful that you are still here with us. Yep, you see, I'd like to think of you guys as family, close associates, people who understand me and understand what's going on. and want to do things about that, who actually want to affect change. So I really do appreciate that and appreciate you for sticking around. So, like I said, final segment of the show. We're going to talk so much smack about these celebrities. Oh, man, I had to wait. I had to wait until the end of the show because I wanted to tear into all of these people. Look at this creepy, creepy, sick son of a gun. Look at John Podesta over here on Ancient Aliens. Oh, my Lord. Wow. Let's play this clip for you guys. Sketchy. No, we gotta reload this. We gotta make sure you got this sketchy guy. Cause I want we gotta listen to this. You got John Podesta, known for Spirit Cooking, Pedogate, and Pizzagate. You know, all of it that we've covered over here, being exposed in the Clinton emails. You got this guy coming over here on Ancient Aliens talking about declassified UFO information. They're trying to have this guy save face. They're trying to have this guy look normal. Let's take a listen. Oh, come on. It's loading. It's loading. It better load. And for people who don't know, you can go back and you can go listen to our episode with the Underground Resistance Network team, where we've talked about John Podesta and his connections to Pedogate, Pizzagate, Spirit Cooking. We've also talked about him and Chester Bennington of Linkin Park, his connection with the Clintons, trafficking people in Haiti. And now he's over here on Ancient Aliens. And no one finds that the least bit odd. This man, and don't worry, I'll get to Kanye, I'll get to Pope Francis too, but I wanted to start with this guy. They have him over here on Ancient Aliens talking about declassified UFO information. To me, again, you know, this is him trying to save face. This is him or them trying to control the narrative, and obviously sweep other operations underneath the rug. You see, if they can put people out there, people like this guy, in positions of powers, and even though they'll be discredited, even though they'll be controversial, they'll still put them out there because they have influence. Because they can affect the narrative, because they can add that level of change that most people wouldn't be able to. Let's take a listen. All of my equipment just never wants to work. When I put this up May 2nd, it's from Sign of the Times. It says, Ancient Aliens features John Podesta. Hillary Clinton would have declassified UFO information. It says, Hillary Clinton's campaign chair was on cable television Friday night peddling conspiracy theories about extraterrestrial life forms, and nobody seemed to have noticed. In fairness, I didn't really believe it until I saw it either. But there he was, John Podesta, speaking gravely over foreboding music, lending his very earnest insights to Ancient Aliens on the History Channel. Podesta has long been in avid pursuit of truth about the UFOs, memorably reassuring the public during the Clinton's 2016 campaign. He'd convinced her that we'd need an effort to kind of go look at that and declassify as much as we can so that the people have their legitimate questions answered. And so it came to be. This former White House chief of staff and counselor to the president sat before Ancient Alien cameras,
U.S. government covering up the truth about alien contact,
and unloaded on them.
And if so, why?
The government seems to be completely unaccountable to the American public. They
You're unaccountable.
Anything that they know or the findings.
The fact that the U.S. government has investigated thousands and thousands of reports leads me to think...
There he is.
Much more.
There's Giorgio Tsoukalos.
Could the government have a secret agenda? One known to only a select few? And perhaps dating back hundreds of years.
John Podesta is going to tell us.
Program continues to be deny, deny, deny.
Sometimes I love George Norrie. Finds it
helpful to sow seeds of disinformation and misinformation to hide the facts about these sorts of programs.
Nick Pope. Ah, man. Those guys. Great show. Now, I'm not going to go on a tangent about aliens and things like that. I love Coast to Coast. Huge fan of George Norrie. All those people, rock stars. And I get what's going on with the ancient aliens. You know, they've got to drag it on. And it is what it is. But we are not here to talk about ancient aliens. What we are here to talk about is crap about John Podesta. Look at that creepy, creepy-looking android alien freak guy. Little child-molesting freak guy over there on Ancient Aliens talking about a lack of trust within the government. You're untrustworthy. Buddy, you got some issues. Don't you talk to me about that.
U.S. government covering up the truth about alien contact.
Oh, man.
And if so, why?
The government seems to be completely unaccountable to the American public.
The unaccountable. Oh, man. Okay. Sorry. I need to. We need to move on for the sake of time. The American government's unaccountable. Shut up, John Podesta. You're literally over here kidnapping children with the Clintons, and you have the gall to tell us that the American government, that the government is unaccountable to the American people. You're unaccountable to the American people. And when asked about these different types of things, your affiliation with Marina Abramovich, quiet. So, you be quiet, John Podesta. We're real good. So let's move on to the next celebrity, the next person on the chopping block, Kanye West. So, Kanye's been making waves on the news. And it's got everybody Twitter-pated. Everybody's over here on Twitter. Getting Twitter-pated over what Kanye's Twittering. Or tweeting, my bad. Talking about mental prisons. Saying slavery was a choice. You know, saying, oh man, Trump's my boy. All kinds of other, if you ask me, real, real dumb stuff. And I say that coming from a place of coming from a place of compassion, because I really do understand, you know, what he's trying to say and what he's trying to get across, but he's got to understand the context. Context. Saying get out of mental prisons, get off of the plantation. You know, he likes how Candace Owens thinks. He likes this, that, and the third. What we are witnessing with the Kanye fiasco right now is the ability to have opinions, to have thoughts. That's what I mean by influential oppressions. Influential opposition. Because that's how these people work. They have to mix lies with truth. And they have to tell you these things in a kind of double-minded way. They have to tell you lies mixed with truth. So what they got Kanye over here doing is over here rambling, truth. So much so that people are like, I get it. We're tired, we're bored, we don't want to really hear from you now. And people shut down. So when he's talking about opioid addiction, when he's talking about slavery, when he's talking about all of the stuff that we're trying to address, this is stuff that people have to come to in gradual increments, and having somebody like Kanye tell you, you're not really going to hear it. And then on top of that, he's representing Donald Trump. He's saying stuff like slavery was a choice. I'm not going to sit up here and stand for Kanye. He's a grown man. He knows what he said. But the entire media spectrum is just shook on what he has to say. And this is obviously a distraction. You know, like I said, the stuff that's going on with the police state, stuff that's going on with Syria, stuff that's going on with Russia, stuff that's going on in Puerto Rico, stuff that's going on in Venezuela, stuff that's going on with China, even what's going on with North Korea and South Korea. There is so much happening on the global spectrum, and it's all just kind of being washed away because we want to laugh at Kanye for saying stuff that we do know to be true to some degree, but it's easier to disagree and condemn one another. So let's take a listen to Kanye during his little recent, his recent blurb thing that he's done.
I don't think people necessarily understand what happened last week with the Great Make America Great Again hat. What are you trying to do with the message you're sending?
Well, it was really just my subconscious. It was a feeling I had, you know, like people were taught how to think. We're taught how to feel. We don't know how to think for ourselves. We don't know how to feel for ourselves. People say feel free, but they don't really want us to feel free. And
I'm going to stop him right there because you know, I agree 1,000%. That's probably one of the more truer things that he said in this. I won't stop this a whole lot more after this, but he's right. We're taught how to think. We're taught how to feel. We're taught what to think, how to act, and all this other stuff. So whenever you have society and social media being the main purveyor of this, or one of the main pushers of this, of generating or governing how you think, how you feel, and what you should say, this is more prevalent than ever. You know, we really don't look at how society manufactures our consent and how social media basically encourages us to have and adopt groupthink, the hive mentality. The individual thinking for yourself, that's for some weird reason, that's become old school.
I felt a freedom in, first of all, just doing something that everybody tells you not to do. I just love Trump. That's my boy. Like, you know, it's like so many rappers, you'll look at a video of Snoop Dogg loving Trump, but then he get in the office and now they don't love him. Like, Trump is one of rap's favorite people, no, right?
But we talk about this, that before he was elected president, people in hip-hop, it was an in thing to put Donald Trump in your rhyme somewhere.
Yeah. And by the way, I am in hip-hop, but I'm not just in hip-hop. I'm a black person in a black community, but I'm not just that. I feel like one thing is people try to minimize me to artists, hip-hop, black community. Yeah, I'm always going to represent that, but I also represent the world. When you hear about slavery for 400 years, for 400 years, that sounds like a choice. Like, you was there for 400 years and it's all of y'all? You know, like, it's like we're mentally in prison. I like the word prison because slavery.
I got to stop him right there. So what he's talking about, 400 years of slavery. What he's talking about is, you know, saying he would be like Harriet Tubman or Nat Turner. What he's talking about is being a revolutionary. What he's talking about is 400 years and it took, what he's saying is it took people that long to get over the concept of slavery and the revolt. I get what he's saying, but soundbite media, corporate controlled media these days, they're not going to say that. They're not going to put that type of stuff out. At the same time, some of the if slavery was a choice memes that are on Twitter that people are saying are hilarious. One of them was talking about, oh, I'm about to call HR. I'm about to call human resources because Massa hit me too hard. Oh, just found my new love over there on Plantation Mingle. You know, like all kinds of jokes. But slavery was not a choice, Kanye. People did not have that. They did not have that choice. And generalizing it and putting it in that kind of context really upsets a lot of people. But at the same time, I get that we need to move forward. We need to move forward. We have been stuck in a plantation of thought, in a thought prison, in a mental prison, in thought control for so long that we've been in this victim mentality, in this prison mentality to where it's like, oh, boo-hoo, feel bad for me. Personal, and this is just because we're here on this topic. Personally, you know, whenever I first started this about 3 years ago and even doing the page 4 years ago, do you know how many people were... And you guys will see this sometimes, even when I go Instagram live. Do you know how many people are shocked by the fact that I'm black? Apparently, I can't be black and I can't talk about this type of stuff at the same time. But this is what's happening when I say that we are moving forward in a cultural revolution. So much stuff is happening on so many different levels that we're becoming and stepping into a whole different versions of people that we'd never really thought possible. This is why I ask people all the time, contemplate Renaissance over revolution. These are important concepts for us to move forward. But I digress. Slavery was not a choice. Kanye, and we all have to move forward, regardless of whoever you're married with or how much money you have.
Goes too direct to the idea of blacks. It's like slavery, Holocaust Jews, slavery is blacks. So prison is something that unites us as one race, blacks and whites being one race, that we're one, we're the human race. Do you feel that I'm feeling, do you feel that I'm being free and I'm thinking free?
I actually don't think you're thinking anything. I think what you're doing right now is actually the absence of thought. And the reason why I feel like that
is because Kanye, you're entitled to your opinion. You're entitled to believe whatever you want. But there is fact and real world, real life consequence behind everything that you just said. And while you are making music and being an artist and living the life that you've earned by being a genius, the rest of us in society have to deal with these threats to our lives. We have to deal with the marginalization that has come from the 400 years of slavery that you said for our people was a choice. Frankly, I'm disappointed, I'm appalled, and brother, I am unbelievably hurt by the fact that you have morphed into something, to me, that's not real. Bro, you gotta be responsible, man.
Bro, I'm sorry I hurt you.
You gotta be responsible.
No. I'm sorry I hurt you, bro.
Bro, your voice is too big.
You got to be responsible. And he's right, you know. Kanye can't be over here popping up at the mouth because, you know, because he's got a few, because he's got some change. Granted, you know, every time we talk about Kanye, you know, it's always something controversial. You can't stop Kanye from making t-shirts. You can't stop Kanye from making shoes. You can't stop Kanye from making liquor. You can't stop Kanye from doing whatever Kanye's going to do. Kanye's going to Kanye. And I do respect that. But at the same time, you know, everybody's got repercussions, man. You can't do that. So good on them for calling out Kanye. There's other stuff, too, that he pointed out that wasn't in that interview. And I definitely hope you guys go look at it and check it out. But Kanye being Kanye, trying to subtly wake people up and do what Kanye does, you know, that's just, again, more of that idol worship. Stop that. Celebrities, they do what they do. We can't allow them to influence our thinking. That's why you have to be your own free thinker. You've got to think for yourself, because otherwise you have people like Kanye, like John Podesta, and even people like Pope Francis telling you how to think and what to feel. You have Pope Francis earlier on Sunday basically asking, do we really want peace? Then let's ban all weapons so we don't have to live in fear of war. Now, Pope Francis Pope Francis is not, this guy's an antichrist. He is an antichrist. There is no reason he should be in the church. If anything, he's in the church to bring the church down. Everything this guy says is blasphemous. It goes against the church. This dude is a globalist. This dude is an elitist. This guy is pushing an agenda. He is with Agenda 21. He's with Agenda 2030. He's with it. Okay. Everything Pope Francis has basically said since he's come into the papacy is in alignment with what the Illuminati would want. So whenever you have Pope Francis over here talking about, oh, we need to disarm the public. Oh, if we really want to live in peace, let's ban all weapons. That's something like a frickin' third. That's something like a child would say. That's something someone who is intellectually dishonest or intellectually ignorant, or who is a mental midget. That's somebody who's really not understanding the gravitas of the situation. Who's really not understanding the weight of their statements. There's no way. Okay. Say we do ban all the weapons, right? Who's confiscating them? Then that person becomes the ruler, because then they have all the weapons. Live in fear of war. Unfortunately, this is human nature. I would like to have peace, but these people don't. These people don't, period. They can't make money off of peace. These people don't operate off of peace. It's not even about the weapons. It's not even about the weapons. We need weapons in order to defend ourselves. How are you going to ban knives? Look at what's going on in London. They ban guns. They ban knives, and there's still attacks happening. People are going to use cars. What constitutes as a weapon? You want to start, you want peace, you got to start with inside. You got to start having a culture of peace, a culture of compassion, a culture of understanding. Weapons are literally there for you to have the ability to defend yourself, to have rights, to have this culture of peace and prosperity and compassion. So Pope Francis, you can sit your happy self down. You can sit your happy self down, and you can send Cardinal George Pell to stand trial on historical child sex abuse charges. That's right. That's right. See, the pedophiles, because Cardinal George Pell, he's a Vatican treasurer, Pope Francis is right-hand man, this dude's out here basically trafficking children. I'm not down for that. Why don't you, Pope Francis, how about you get rid of the Pope mobile? Get rid of that little, that glass protector between you and the people if you're so peace-loving. Tear down the Vatican City walls. Get out of here with that. Pope Francis talking about disarming the population. And then his go-to man, his right-hand man's over here literally going to trial because he's got charges of sexually abusing people. But again, this is the church. This is how corrupt these people are. This is the modern church. I put this up May 1st. It's from your Newswire by Nima Harris. It says an Australian court has ruled that the Vatican treasurer George Pell must face trial on charges of historical child sexual offenses. Cardinal Pell has become the most senior Catholic figure to face sexual assault charges after the court in Melbourne committed him to stand trial on historical offenses involving multiple victims. The Pope has said that he would not comment on the case until it was over. Telegraph reports, after being asked for a plea, the 76-year-old Pell, a trusted aide of Pope Francis, stated firmly and loudly, quote, not guilty. Magistrate Belinda Wallington dismissed about half the charges because of a lack of evidence or concerns about the witness credibility. These include, according to Pell's lawyer, the more vile of the alleged offenses. But Miss Wellington ordered the cardinal to face trial by a jury for alleged sexual offenses at a pool in the 1970s in Ballarat near Melbourne and at St. Patrick's Cathedral in Melbourne in the 1990s when he was the city's archbishop. After the magistrate left the court, a group of the cardinal's critics broke into applause. The precise details of the alleged offenses are yet to be revealed. Much of the committal hearing was committed to the public because the case involved alleged sexual offenses. The case follows an explosive report aired on ABC News in 2016 in which two men claim they were groped by Pell in the late 1970s at the Eureka Pool in Ballarat, where the cleric had grown up and worked. Quote, he would play games like throw the kids out of the water. Lyndon Monument, a former student, claimed to the ABC, quote, you know, his hand touching your genitals and stuff outside of your bathers or your shorts. And then that slowly became hand down the front of your pants or your bathers or whatever you call them. One of the men who made the allegations, Damien Digman, died in January after a long illness. Pope Francis did not force Pell to resign after he was charged and granted leave to the cardinal to return to Australia to fight the charges. So that's right. Literally sticking his hand down people's pants. Where do you think that kind of behavior comes from? Where do you think that culture comes from? Look at the Me Too movement. Look at Alistair Mack. Hell, go back and listen to the episode with me and Dr. John A. King. We talk about this type of stuff. This behavior, it's wrong. But don't worry, Facebook is going to develop a dating feature. This is the world we live in. This is 2018. And the more that we try to get caught up in this circus that they have us paying into, the more that we become the actual acts. That we become the actual clowns. The opposition, the influential opposition, the oppressors, so to speak, we can't let them know that they're oppressing us. We can't let them know that they're winning or have any effect on us. It's time that we take a stand and stand up for something that we believe in. It's time that we affect change in the way that we should, because we already are. Believe it or not, we are creating change. Despite everything that we've gone over in this episode, we have been able to create this alternative media platform, to create this culture of awareness, to create this community of compassion. This is what we were charged to do. And we have even higher expectations. We have even higher aspirations. We have higher problems that we are going to face. But everything that you see us dealing with today, now, in the future, in the present, makes the way for the future. And that's why we cannot let these people win, and we can't let them think they win, because they may have a plan, but humanity and freedom, it cannot be contained. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Orwellian Realities, designing the future, and influential. Is it oppressions? Oppressions or opposition? An influential opposition. Wow, talk about a powerful episode. You know, I have all kinds of different things I'm trying to say to you guys, and I'm trying to get out so many different thoughts, concepts, and points all at the same time that I never really am able to effectively encapsulate it and then, you know, tell you guys. Like, basically, you know, the celebrity worship, that's got to stop. I'm not going to try to decipher all these people's, you know, woke statements that they want to try to make, you know, or the 5D chess that Trump wants to play and everything else. I think it's better for us to really just be honest and point these types of things out. But I digress. Like I said, I covered everything I could in the episode, and I really tried to get across so many different things when looking at what we have to face. And it's only going to intensify. Every single week, it seems like a whole different hurdle. But if you guys have any questions, feel free to email me. I'll have it in the description bar below. If you guys want to support our operation, as I said before, think about becoming a Patreon exclusive member or donate a dollar here or a dollar there. It really helps us get to where we're trying to go. I'd like to do a lot more video work and have a more expansive network and all kinds of other things that I'd like to do. But you know what? You guys stay tuned and that'll get to you. And remember, guys, stay vigilant. Expose lies and share truth. This is Noisera, Freedom Faction, out.